You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 2. Brought to you in part by Alpine Credits. Own your home and need a loan? With Alpine Credits, homeowners get approved.
All right, the Leafs are back in action tonight. Preseason game number 3 with Buffalo in town. John Tavares will make his debut at Scotiabank Arena. You can hear the game right here on TSN Radio. It's Brian Hayes and the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill. Noodles not in attendance because he's in Ottawa tonight. Somehow, Noodles calling every Ottawa preseason game. And the game can be seen on TSN 5 tonight. And the host of the panel, James Duthie, is in studio. How you doing, James?
8 or 9 more years of that contract we have, which is okay. But hopefully the next 2 or 3 might be a little rough.
You're bracing yourself for that?
Yeah.
So who's the panel tonight?
The panel is Dave Poulin and myself. It's a light panel. We do lighter panels for the Sens.
Dude, I'm telling you, it's like, it is what it is.
The size
for Pooley because he's got to...
the size of the panel...
You're literally going to have to come up with some video yourself.
...is proportionate to the prognostication for success of the season. So Leafs panel, big panel this season.
So would TSN ever hear anything from Ottawa saying, like, where's the other guys or what's going on here?
I don't know. I'm just waiting for the day where it's just me. I've got to do a 4-minute soliloquy in the intermission about the huge. So I want to tell you, exhibition hockey, I've said it a million times, I hate it. I know there's a lot of excitement.
There's some bad games, man. Bad lineups,
games. It's good in this market. You get to see Tavares. You get to see the different combinations. That's all good. The fights for spots on D. But I'm sure everybody listening and all, we just want to get this thing started, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is, you're going to go to a game in the nation's capital tonight. Hey, the Chicago Blackhawks are in town. All right?
And keep in mind, you have to have 8 pros.
I don't know that this is the case here. So the Chicago Blackhawks, let's go over some of the guys you want to see.
Seabrook,
Seabrook.
Kane.
No
Taves.
No Kane. No Taves. Here is your Chicago Blackhawks lineup tonight. I'll give it to you. Down the middle, Jordan Schrader, Marcus Kruger. Okay, he's an NHLer. Marcus Edsel, Dominique Cahoon, Anthony Lewis. Down the left side for your Chicago Blackhawks tonight, Andreas Martinsson, Graham Knott, Terry Broadhurst. On the right side tonight for your Chicago Blackhawks, John Hayden, Matheson Iacapella, and Dylan Sakura. Your defense tonight, Brandon Davidson, NHLer, somewhat. Dominic Cahoon, Henry Yakaharju, or whatever how the heck you say that one. I haven't said it in a while. Dennis Gilbert, Yanni Tolula, Luke Snuggerud, and Eric Gustafson. There is your Chicago Blackhawks lineup.
Here's what's scary, James. They're favored in Vegas.
I didn't give your goalies. It's Matt Tompkins and Colin Delia.
They're favored in Vegas.
They're favored in Vegas.
What, do they look?
I think you just fade Ottawa. That's the new rule.
Oh, yeah.
You just fade Ottawa.
No, but I think tonight, if this is the night.
This is the night.
This should be guaranteed win night.
Right.
At Canadian Tire Center.
This is
their greatest chance.
This is Baker Mayfield's coming out, and they're finally going to win tonight. That is a pathetic
lineup. It is sad. And Pooley and I were going back and forth today. Like he was. There are rules, as you say. There are rules for exhibition games that you have to dress, as you say, 8 or 10 pros or veterans or first round picks or whatever it may be. I'm not sure that the
You're
Hawks are right
fraction?
On the line here.
Calling
right
in fraction
on, the line
on
the,
this.
I am
being
calling
for
a fine
podcast with your Canadian happiness.
Oh, the
correspondence.
Reporter happiness rankings. That's Puffy who does that, not me. But Brent Wallace is always last. He's always the most miserable, no matter what's going on.
He's just miserable no matter what.
Yeah, that's what. I mean, it's the running gag we put in there. Orleski's usually pretty happy. Wind's blowing in her hair. Lalji, he's just coaching football. Basically, however his high school football team is doing, if they're doing well, he's up near the top of the list. Rashog, he had some downtime last year with the whole Montoya saga. But I think he's doing really well right now, riding a wave. Jermaine Franklin, always a happy guy. Mark Masters, if he's at Wimbledon, usually up high. That's the way it goes.
All right.
Any other thoughts?
There's a lot to get into here. You guys prepared for this?
Yeah.
Why don't we go around the table?
It's not a big table. There's 3 of us.
No, it's not. There's 3 of us in here. But with radio, it's the, you know how it is, man. It's the theater of the mind.
Okay.
Place a points total on McDavid's season, presuming health, 82 games, where you say, where's the limit where you say, that's insane, he's not doing that.
What did he get last year? Do you have that?
He had 108 points.
I think he's going to get 125 points this year.
That feels high.
Did you see that?
What did he play in games last year? Did he miss a... He was pretty close to a full season,
I think he
right?
played 82 last year. Real close to it anyway.
I'll say 115. I'm still not convinced of the guys around him. Puljujarvi, is he going to be his star winger? He looked... That one goal was nice last night.
Like, he's got a nice...
I thought it was McDavid. I had the volume down on the Puljujarvi for a second, and I'm like, that guy was flying. But I'm not sure if he can still be a full-time... You still need that... For a 125 number, you got to have a guy next to him who's going to score 35 or 40 goals, no?
Nugent Hopkins might get 30 himself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you need to rely on your teammates.
Okay, so I say 115, you say 125, Hayes?
I didn't say anything. Yeah, I think he goes up over last year. Again, he's played all 82 games the past 2 years. In 16-17, McDavid had 100 points. Last year, he had 108.
He had 108 last year, and he was sick for like 3 months.
And he's not playing with anybody, and their power play, I believe, was terrible. Their special teams was like atrocious. I may have that wrong. Maybe the penalty kill, I know, was brutal, but I'm not sure the power play was that great.
Mm-hmm.
But I expect him to just keep ascending north. You know, I think he hits 115 for sure. Like, I think if he's healthy, he's 115. Because he's better. Somehow he's better.
Yeah, I think he should be a lock to score 50 goals. Like he's going to get three breakaways.
Well, he is
a game.
Because he's entering, without lack of a better term, his man years, right? Like 19, 18, 20 years. But now this sort of 20, what is he, 21 now?
Yeah, 21 to 27.
21, these are the years, right? And so stronger, shouldn't get pushed around whatsoever.
Yeah. The guys that skate with him in the summer say, the defensemen say, like good NHL defensemen say, it's just no contest.
Well,
you saw those drills where it's like the forward takes off and the D-man's got to kind of close. They can't.
You saw Trouba last night.
Yeah.
That's Jacob Trouba.
Yeah, Trouba and Morrissey were backed in and into the goal crease.
He was basically on top of the crease because McDavid was coming through the neutral zone and he's like, I'm dead. Yeah, I have no chance. Like, what? Maybe this is the way to phrase it because the eras are, this is the way to adjust to an era. When Gretzky was doing his thing, like I remember my dad telling me when they did fantasy pools in the 80s, no one was allowed to draft Gretzky because it was like whoever gets first pick, that's a joke.
That was
you win the pool.
That was everybody. My time, sadly.
Right,
I'm on the same par with. But
how much of a gap do you expect between McDavid at one in points and the second player in the league? Do you think he can separate himself by 20 points?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I think that's possible for sure.
Then he's probably got to do over 120 points. Because Giroux had 100-plus last year. Kucherov had 100-plus. I think there was a McKinnon maybe just hit 100 or close to it.
I said 125, and I'm not even going to get in my car and say, was I being crazy?
20's a lot more than the next guy. That would be some kind of season.
I think he can. I think he's going to do it. I think 125 points is almost a lock. And I know I'm all horned up because of what I saw in the highlights last night. I was like... I was having lunch. I was like, what the hell?
You're being the quiz master. You're being reactionary to one game. That's what he does.
He never does that.
He sees one highlight and he changes. It'll be like Panarin will have a good game. Is Panarin the best player in the world right now?
That's on the quiz?
that's on the quiz every day. I think we've had that question 47,000 times. And, the talk of McDavid is that he's faster. But the stuff that comes out of training sessions just makes me laugh. I'm sure you guys have had this discussion. The best shape ever thing is the greatest thing in hockey because every year there's 200 guys that are in the greatest shape ever.
Yeah, and then Jake Dodge.
Did you ever come to camp and your agent or you said best shape of his life? He's quicker. He's a good 2 steps quicker.
No, I was telling Brian yesterday. Paul Maurice put his hand on my shoulder. I was just having a coffee like a month before camp. He just put his hand on my shoulder and he goes, you're like big, right? And I go, what are you talking about? He goes, like your neck and your, like you're just big. And I was like, oh boy, this is after I got rid of the guy, finally, after 10 years of them, and then he gets hired by the Leafs.
Well, you and I were talking about the kid in Tampa the other night. I don't know if it's come up on the show yet, who came in 35 pounds.
Oh yeah.
According to Bob McKenzie, and just got released from his contract. And a decent player who had a chance to play big minutes in Tampa this year. That's, and I asked, oh, I mean, what's the most out of shape you ever came in? Because that's absolutely like you're throwing away potentially millions of dollars by doing that. And I understand some people have issues that way.
It must be there must
be something else going on in your life, right?
It sounds it screams of to me sending a message that I don't want to play hockey anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it kind of speaks to me. You know, Jake Dodgson is who we're talking about, and he was 30 pounds overweight and like a 25% body fat. And maybe he had something going on. Maybe he had surgery. I don't know. But playing amateur psychologist, it kind of speaks to me like, you know what? I didn't want to go to the gym, and I don't know if I want to play. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know I'm contractually obligated and I'm getting down here. But even if it was like subliminal, you know, something's going on because you're a pro player. You know you can't show up. There's no way he got on a flight down to Tampa thinking this is going to go over well. You know, like there's no way you're on your way down.
Look at yourself a week before camp and you say, like, what have I done here?
Yeah. You're like, I'm in big trouble. I'm in big, big trouble.
But did you ever say that to yourself, Jeff? Like, were you ever a week before camp going, uh-oh? Honestly.
Well, I remember I had surgery, and I kept going down there to the rink, and they were like, oh, you can't do anything. You just got to... I'm like, I can ride the bike. It's my shoulder. Like, I can hold my arm like this. And it's on the player. I mean, but when they say you don't do anything, and then all of a sudden, I looked at the scale, like, July 31st, and it said 241.
And what was your playing weight?
Like, 215. And I was just, I got my elliptical, and every night I put a garbage bag on, and I was just riding the elliptical for an hour.
I wish there was video of that that existed.
Cutting weight.
Yeah, I was living at my parents' house because my house was being built, and I got the elliptical in my bedroom, and I was just riding it for an hour at night.
The ultimate fighter. Cutting weight. You've got
to
make
What'd you get down to?
I didn't get down to enough. 220, I told you, 228.
You got down, okay.
James Duthie in studio. Rasmus Dahlin will not be at the Scotiabank Arena tonight. He's going to play in Buffalo tomorrow. But where does he rank in terms of your must-see TV-type players?
Yeah, right there. I'm trying to think of a defenseman that in his first year dominated recently. Yeah, I mean, Doughty... I don't know when his first year was Doughty great. Maybe it took till year two. I think there was moments for Doughty.
Ekblad won rookie of the year.
I think Doughty played in the Olympic team his first year, James.
No, it wasn't his first year. It was his second.
I feel like it was the second, wasn't it?
I think he was 20. It was close, but I think he was in his second year.
Well, you're talking about Van? Because he was the Ottawa draft. The Stamkos draft was 08 or 09. Anyway. I saw enough of the kid at the World Junior that he's absolutely dazzling, and I just wonder in his first year in the NHL when he still looks like a kid. We do that at the draft. We always do that, you know, at the Stanley Cup Final. They bring the prospects in, and we do a little sit down, a little quiz with the five of them, and he's another one that just looked like a. Just such a... This is the only judgment I have of these, like, five top prospects of who looks the most mature and ready for the National Hockey League. And I remember Mittelstadt, the kid in Buffalo, like, 2 years ago. I'm like, this kid looks 14. Like, he can't play in the NHL, and he looks fantastic right now. Dahlin still looked like a really wide-eyed kid there, and I always wonder when you get to the National Hockey League. But, boy, when he gets on the ice, he's something else. So I would say He's like a top five must-see player early in the season.
Yeah, for me, he is, for sure. Just watching highlights forever, because it's been a storm, right? Like, when you've got a phenom in Europe, it's kind of like Matthews a little bit. Like, Matthews played that draft year in Switzerland, and all you'd see is YouTube. You know, and he showed up at the World Juniors, and Dahlin performed incredibly well, and he put on a show. But in 2018, it's all about YouTube. So all you see is the highlights. You know, they're not showing him getting blown past or taking a stupid penalty. So you just assume this guy is flawless.
Right.
You know, and first overall, he plays with a cockiness and arrogance that I really appreciate. And I hope they don't try to beat it out of him. He's got to be careful. He can't be silly and careless. But there's a thin line, and I feel like he's going to straddle that. And if he falls on the right side of it, he's going to be a blast to watch.
I actually think Buffalo, for the first time in a long time, it's not must-see TV like you feel about kind of the Oilers for a team you don't necessarily care about, but you need to watch them. But Buffalo's close to that. Because this Mittelstadt kid I was talking about, like at the World Juniors, he was unbelievable. He was the best forward by eons at the World Juniors last year. And to have him and Eichel and Darlene now together, that'll be something to watch.
James Duthie in studio. Speaking of kids making their debut, have you seen this kid for the Leafs that's going to play tonight?
The one with the long name?
Semyon Dur Argouchintsev. I believe I'm pronouncing that improperly.
Masters sent out an email, and I tried to say it five times by myself, and I failed every time, and then I said, I'm just going to go with the short form. SDM,
is SDA.
It? SDA.
I'm not kidding you when I say this. He looks like he's 12 years old. You know how that's always the throwaway? Mm-hmm. Look at this guy. He looks 12 years old. He actually looks 12 years old. Like, I can't believe how young and small he is.
And Johnny Gaudreau could be his father, that kind of
looks? Yes, exactly. And just for that alone, I don't know enough about the kid. I think he came over from Russia and was playing in the GTHL.
Yeah, I think he had 50 points in 68 games in the O or something.
Yeah, plays in Peterborough, I believe. They took him third, fourth round. I'm supporting him just because, A, his name, just to hear Bowen call it, and Miller and Cuthbert. But also, I mean, this would be a cool story. Small guy, looks that young. He's eons away from playing mm-hmm. in the league, but sounds like they might give him a taste tonight.
Well, we had that Jack Hughes on Bob's ranking show early. By the way, really impressive kid talking to him. Some of those kids, when you do the interviews with the 17-year-olds, they can't get a sentence out. Not because they're just nervous.
How about Darlene last year?
Yeah.
Was that tough?
That was tough. Jack Hughes is going to be great. And his brother Quinn is the same, the kid who got drafted by Vancouver. But he's 163. They list him at 5'10". He's basically the same size Patrick Kane coming into the league. And I just think hockey's in a great place where guys like this still can be phenoms and dominate, because that wouldn't be the case 10 or 15 years ago.
Well, speaking of which, it's a good segue into the Max Domi, Aaron Ekblad stuff.
Mm-hmm. I thought that suspension was a joke. And I think preseason suspensions are just an utter... To not give him one game or two games of the regular season, it's just... If I'm Aaron Ekblad with a history of concussions, I'm going, that's...
Dude, that doesn't matter. You don't go up to somebody and say, oh, I shouldn't do this. This guy's got a concussion. Nobody gives a...
Okay, but I'm just saying, I said if I'm Aaron Ekblad, I think that's a joke that I get schmucked in the face, sucker punched like that, and the guy gets no punishment.
Yeah, well, you go in the corner and somebody cross-checks you from behind. That sucks, too. Get over it.
So, what are you saying?
I don't know. Everyone's all outraged. Oh, it's like... The guy punched him in the head. It was stupid. He got the rest of the preseason. Big deal. All the fake outrage out there. Oh, this is just all the people coming out.
Why is it
ping pong?
Why is it fake outrage, though? If you sucker punch a guy in the face, you should get punishment. A preseason suspension is not punishment. I'm not standing here saying he should get 10 or 20 games like those kind of calls, but you have to send some kind of message, and a preseason suspension sends zero message whatsoever. So I'm sure if you were the one who got sucker punched in the face...
I got sucker punched in the face.
Okay, if you had like six concussions previous, and apparently didn't have a concussion, so it was okay, I'm sure you wouldn't feel the exact same way. It was like Wardo and Scotty Walker.
Yeah, we talked about that yesterday.
Yeah, how many games did Scott Walker get?
No, I know.
Zero.
That was, if you go back to the Wardo scrum after that, that's pretty good TV.
But you bringing up his concussion past mm-hmm. has been a big part of the dialogue. Now, this is an extreme example, because Domi, it was a greasy punch.
Yeah.
Drops his glove, and today Domi's like, I didn't mean to hurt him. Yes, you did. You drop your punch and pop a guy in the face. That's exactly what you're meaning to do. But... The idea of bringing up a player's concussion past, I think, in general, is unfair to the opposition.
No, that's...
You can't play the sport that way.
The only point I'm trying to make is, if you are that guy, if you are Aaron Ekblad, and then you see that suspension, that has to frustrate you, because that could have been career-ending. It could be. If you have a history of concussions like that, he could miss 6 months because of that punch to the head.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I were him, I would be really furious. I agree with you that Max Domi can't be sitting there when he's winding up going, oh yeah, this guy's got a history of concussion.
What about the whole retribution?
That's not going to happen.
It always happens. It won't happen in the next game. Maybe it's not Ekblad. Something. They have to now, right? Don't they have to get it over with? First time they play each other, Ekblad and Domi have to fight or whatever hockey rules are.
But that's why this is such a complicated conversation.
Oh, because...
Like, well, but also, like, I've noticed there have been some takes where it's like, Well, of course, now the Panthers are going to have to get retribution because the league didn't do anything.
And they said they were going to get retribution.
Right, but even if the league gave him 10 regular season games, that wouldn't change anything. Ekblad would still feel like, based on honor, or someone on that team, based on honor, it has nothing to do with the league's contribution to the situation. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where I think people are actually off base here, where it's like, well, of course the Panthers are going to have to get retribution. The league is too soft to take care
of it. Yeah, that's stupid.
Doesn't make a difference what the league did.
It's stupid.
The league gave them 50 games. The next time they played, they'd be like, all right, well, someone's still got to go fight them. You know, it has nothing to do with what the league does in terms of the way Ekblad and the Panthers are going to respond.
Yeah, I don't know if we're past that. Forever, the retribution thing was so dumb. What was the Leafs one when... I got them about 7-8 years ago, and it's the same thing. You know they're going to fight.
John Scott, Phil Kessel.
Yeah, that's what it was, wasn't it? That's probably what it was. And then the next Scott comes in, and who does he fight? One of the tough guys on the Leafs at the time, right? Yeah, first shift, and then it's over with. And yeah, the whole thing is dumb. But again, like I said, I the point I'm trying to make that I made off the start is that I think preseason suspensions are a joke. So you might as well not suspend them at all.
Yeah.
So, as a fellow dressing room guy, do you have any tips? So, do you come in like street clothes and you keep your suits in your dressing room?
Well, you know, I have the double dressing room with the bathroom in the middle. This is more of a suite. You haven't got the suite yet.
I can.
That'll
put
take
a
you.
In
no,
there.
It'll take you 4 more years here.
And a couple of Emmys.
You can't get
included.
A toilet in there. I tried.
I'll put one in there.
I tried to push for the shower. The toilet's nice. You know, private moments. Because some of the toilets in this building
get
right?
It's an old building.
So that's just
you
me.
You got to have some spray, though.
Once in a while, some of the guys, I won't name panel guys, ask if they can use my toilet. That's a no-no. That's a no-go.
Someone's asked to use your toilet?
Yeah.
What's wrong with that? I'll bet you've asked them before. Yeah. I'm shocked
never.
You haven't.
I didn't even know you had one. You have to admit I've
Ray
never.
Always wants to use my room and change in my room when he comes, you know, because he doesn't have a place. And then what he does? He takes like, because he's an idiot, he takes like the 100 ties that I have there and he ties them all together because he thinks he's funny.
Yeah, that's stupid.
That is
very welcome. I know this is a big deal for you. You took a 40% pay cut just to get your dressing room. No. It's exciting for you.
Have you stepped foot in that room yet?
Oh, yeah. I put my clothes in there yesterday.
Look at you, man.
You know what I'm going to get? I don't know how much room you have. I want to get like one of those IKEA I want a bed because sometimes I need a nap. I come in for something, do the podcast, and then I got a game 4 hours later. So I'm going to get some sort of bed.
Pot.
I'm going to get a bed device in there.
All right. Are you two done or what?
Me too.
Nobody cares about either of your
rooms. Futon. We should get matching futons.
Buddy, all you need is one of those things you put in pools. You know, the things you still lie on? You just lie it on the ground and put a blanket on it.
If you do that, I want a photo.
All right. I have to cut this off.
It's just like, please end this nightmare.
It's agonizing to hear the two of you talk about
ratings have plummeted 80% for Overdrive in the last 4 minutes.
Nobody cares.
Anytime he talks like an idiot with somebody, it's good. But when it's me, it's
dude, who do I bring in to have a personal conversation about something as like unique as this?
It's work-related.
When have I ever done that? Hey, come in, and I want to talk specifically about the pens that we use. Like, when have I ever put you in that kind of situation?
I would tell you to stop.
He's never been more excited than this dressing room.
He's pretty fired up.
Yeah.
All right, buddy.
All
good seeing you.
Sens and Blackhawks tonight. If you don't get it in the Leafs region, find a bar.
Yes.
TSN 7.
Has to happen. Rubber Boots podcast as well. Subscribe. Good man. Here's James Duthie. Your guy, James Duthie.
My dressing room
and all. We all love Duthie. He's the man. Back into the Jays win last night. Baker Mayfield going legend in Cleveland. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. All right, back into the NFL in the 6 p.m. hour. Another example out of Cleveland about how Browns fans, they just don't know how to react to a win. We'll tell you about that later in the afternoon. And Will Blackman will join us, longtime NFLer, NFL Network analyst. He's coming up just after 6:05. Browns finally winning a game. I put myself in a tough spot online. I should have known better. I was trying to make a joke. I tweeted something out about Daron Carter, who's finally made his debut for the Argos. And he's an interesting guy. I mean, he gives you quotes. He'll say what's on his mind, and he's charismatic, and he's a really talented player. But I guess he was chatting with the media or chatting with someone out of Saskatchewan. He said that the Toronto media does a terrible job on expressing how Argonauts fans really are. and I tweet out, like, you've been here for like a couple of weeks, and now all of a sudden,
pain in the ass in the league.
And now you just know everything about Toronto, and you figured it all out, and you put yourself out there on Twitter and about the Argos, and Argos fans will come at you, man, which I kind of like and I support. It's like TFC fans and Toronto Rock fans. But this is a big city. Like, Daron Carter's got to realize this isn't Saskatoon. It's not Regina. Like, this is a Leaf, Raptors, Jays town. And then beyond that, you get the coverage that is kind of left over in a lot of ways. But I know Argos fans are passionate, and they get fired up, and they support their team. And it's no different than TFC fans and Toronto Rock fans. We get emails from and tweets from Rock fans all the time. Why aren't you talking about the Rock? They're on fire. They just made a big signing. They just won a game. It's like, man, the Leafs are playing tonight. The Jays just walked off last night.
We don't do the Toronto Rock. Like, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
we don't...
it's not a disrespectful thing. It's not about, like, oh, man, I really want them to fail.
We're just playing the percentages.
You play the hits, you know? Something big and crazy happens.
Yeah, like, if there's a big-time issue at a Toronto Rock game, I'm sure it'll come across our desk. But for the most part, we got to do the percentages, because if you talk to 10 people that are driving home, one out of 10 maybe wants to talk about the Rock.
Mm-hmm. But I do think, you know, for athletes to cater to the fans, what's interesting about this quote from Carter, and I don't know if he said it directly to, I think it was Rod Peterson who tweeted the quote out, and he's part of the Riders broadcast and a big media guy out in Saskatchewan, but I've seen a number of athletes do it in different markets, including here in Toronto. Speak to the fans, regardless of how big the fan base is, and they will love you for it. You know, stick up for the fans. It's always a smart move. Now, understand that they'll turn on you down the road if you struggle or if you don't perform or you want out.
This guy's just got to be quiet, period. He left Montreal. Do you know why? Not because of lack of ability. Nobody could stand him.
Well, the Riders just cut him. They're just like, you're out.
Yeah.
You know, and I found the quote more humorous than anything else. Like, you've been here for like 3 weeks, and you've got a rich understanding. You're an American kid that's played
from
in
Florida.
Yeah, and all of a sudden you know the whole history of the Argos and the city and the fans and the media. I mean, come on. But Jay's walking off last night, and If you're a fan of the team, it's funny because the smoke home run is actually the most meaningless hit of all of the hits that we saw in the ninth, because it's a veteran guy. I'm curious to find out what they do with him in the offseason. I kind of thought they would float him out leading up to the trade deadline through August. He's got a team-friendly deal. He's put up a pretty good season, quiet 25 home runs. But he's not a part of the future. He's not going to be here in 2 or 3 years.
What is the deal with this? Do you have going to continue the thought?
Well, I'm just saying, like, it's more about the Tellez double, the Jansen home run.
What is this guy all about? Is he just he doesn't like what? How old is this guy? He looks like he's
who?
Rowdy Piper.
Rowdy Tellez. He's a young enough guy, mid-20s.
Is he a beef master, or is he just?
He's a first baseman / DH. Like, he's competing with Justin Smoke in terms of what they're going to do in the future. And that's what's become clear here with the Jays, is you're going to have some battles with younger guys trying to take spots going up against older guys. If Smoke is here next year, Tellez is going to be fighting for starts at first. If Morales is here, then it really complicates things. I think what's become evident is they've got to find a way to get rid of Morales. You can't have him just clogging up a spot and playing DH 150 games a year. He's got to go. You got to get him out. You're going to have to eat some money, see if you can get anything in return, which you might be able to. His numbers have been okay.
Yeah, he had an unbelievable July.
Unbelievable, like, two-week run in August, I think it was. But you're going to have Tellez and Smoke at first. You're going to have Gurriel and Tulowitzki at short if he ever comes back and gets healthy. You're going to have Martin and Jansen behind the plate. You're going to have some battles, potentially. And whoever the next manager is, working in cohesion with the front office, they've got to figure out what they're going to do with these battles and who they're going to lean on, the veteran, or give the kids the opportunity to go out there and sink or swim. And they're probably going to sink a lot next year, but that's fine. Give them the opportunities. That's what I would prepare to see. That's what I would prefer to see.
You got
to
get in. Do you remember watching the Houston Astros 2 or 3 years ago? They were horrendous. Easily the worst team in ball. And the manager, general manager, whatever, kept saying, we're coming. We got guys coming. I'm like, this is never happening.
The light was at the end of that tunnel.
They won the World Series, man.
Absolutely.
As difficult as that was for that fan base, like, I don't know if you can pull up their record, what it was leading up to this.
Oh, they lost well over 100 games.
Well, they were garbage. They came in here, and they would just smoke them. And I was like, this is the worst team I've ever seen. Ever. What does this fan base have to look forward to? Well, you got your answer. They just won the World Series.
If you go back to 2011 through 2013... they lost 106 games, then 107 games, then 111 games, and then started moving up. 92 losses in 2014, and then they were over 500 in 2015, over 500 in 2016, won the World Series with 101 wins in 2017, and they might win another World Series in 2018.
So that was a six-year process.
Basically, yeah. They weren't that good before that, but they were kind of like the Jays have been for a long time. One year they win 74 games, the next 86, but never truly a contending team.
No.
They completely bottomed out after the 2010 season, and it took them a while to get back up. But I would much prefer to see Tellez at first over Smoke, Gurriel Jr. at short over Tulowitzki, obviously Jansen behind the plate over Martin. You know, like, those are going to be the decisions that this team is going to have to make and this ownership is going to have to make. Because I think the fans, they've proven it. That's what they want to see. I want to see Vladdy at third, 150 games next year. I want to see Tellez if he's ready. I want to see McKinney or Hernandez in left. Like, that's what has to be determined, and you got to play it out. And if you lose 100 games, so be it. Hopefully they gain enough experience where in 2 or 3 years down the road, they flip the script.
Yeah, and you got to get the right stopgap guys. You got to get guys like Curtis Granderson, I thought was a good fit when he coming in here, a veteran guy that can play and kind of lead the way. You can't have the young guys leading other young guys. Sometimes you got a mess on your hands.
Yeah, and that's what we're saying here, right? They've got to decide, okay, which vet is going to get some playing time?
Mm-hmm.
Which kid needs some more seasoning? Which kid can come off, you know, not necessarily the bench. You don't want to see a utility guy, a utility situation from a player that you feel like has a bright future ahead of them, but there's going to be some heavy lifting here. But the payroll is going to be cut almost in half just by osmosis because the kids are going to play and the vets are going to be on the way out. And I think the fans are fine with that. We'll see. I mean, the Jays are back in action tonight down at the Rogers Center. I'm assuming with the weather being what it is outside, the dome is more than likely closed.
Like, yeah, people, be safe out there. It's not a joke. Like, the wind, the rain, it's
gross outside.
Yeah, it's garbage.
It is gross. Like, there are tornado warnings up in, like, the Peterborough area.
Yeah.
I think power is going to be out all throughout the city. It was hot today, man. High 20s, early 30s, but the wind was outrageous. All right, back into the NFL in the 6 p.m. hour. Back into the Leaf-Sabres game tonight, teeing that up. John Tavares making his debut at the Scotiabank Arena. And you knew this was coming from a Browns fan. Didn't even take 24 hours. Took them 635 days to finally get a win. Less than 24 hours for an idiot to do exactly what you knew he would do. We'll tell you about that next. So we've been talking a lot about the Browns. And for the past 2 years, whenever we bring up the Browns, we goof on the Browns. I thought Troy Aikman did a very quality job last night of taking subtle shots at them. He said he ran into Ringo Starr. He made a joke about maybe Ringo's there because if they actually win, he's going to perform. Made another kind of backhanded slap about this will be basically the Super Bowl for the Browns if they actually win a game. But then we caught up with a guy from ESPN Radio in Cleveland in the 4 p.m. hour, and the picture that he painted basically expresses what Aikman was saying. Like, they treated that win last night like it was a Super Bowl win.
He described it as the biggest sporting moment in the city's history in the last 15 years. You're talking about a team that's gone to
the city
NBA Finals
4 years in a row.
4 years in a row, World Series.
The tribe were in the World Series. I don't know. I'm just trying to get a read on what you're doing over there. Like, you spilt your coffee.
Yeah, it's a bit of a yard sale over here.
I just feel like you're kind of out of sorts now.
No, I'm not. I'm engaged.
You're
I'm
all
involved.
Good? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the Tribe were in the World Series 2 years ago. The Cavs went to four straight NBA Finals.
This guy said it's the biggest moment in the city's history.
Right. And beating the Jets at home in week three by 4 points is the biggest thing ever.
You want to talk about a flipperoo on a quarterback?
Tyrod Taylor might as well retire.
The Jets. Like, they were like, we've got the next superstar quarterback, and now they just hate him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know what I've noticed is Jets fans, they were loving it when people were pumping Darnold's tires, right? After that week one win in Detroit, yeah, we'll embrace the idea that this guy is the next Dan Marino. Now that he's been brutal for a couple of weeks, and he was awful last night, and they're 1-2, now Jets fans are like, dude, give him a break. It's a short week. The Browns, Miles Garrett's a beast. It's like, are you serious? Like, come on.
Are you serious?
Like, let's get real here. Okay, it was an overreaction in week one, just like it's an overreaction to say he's a bust or something. He's not a bust. He's 21 years old. He's got three starts in the NFL. I don't know who's going to be better, Baker Mayfield or Sam Darnold. But I also didn't know who was going to be better after that win in Detroit in week one.
Well, it should be for Cleveland fans. I'm not like they have anything to base it off of, but they should just temper their act. Like, just leave the kid alone.
Goes both ways.
Let him go through the year. He's going to have some stinkers.
Right.
Mayfield. You remember watching Peyton Manning his first year in the league?
Abysmal.
Abysmal. I kept saying to my roommate, we'd always be traveling, he'd be playing. I'm like, this guy sucks. He sucks.
I think he threw over 30 interceptions, and I think they only won one game. Aikman was the same thing. Aikman went first overall in 89, I think, and the Cowboys went 1-15 his first year. They were atrocious, and they won a Super Bowl two or three years later. But people aren't going to react objectively or, you know, keep their heads on straight. And here's an example. Some idiot in Cleveland took the day off work today. That's smart. Because the Browns won, sorry, I'm going to put my career on the line and call into the office and say I'm not coming in. And he went out and he got a Baker Mayfield tattoo.
Like with the diagram of the play they ran?
Yes. The Philly special last night, the Cleveland special. He's calling it the Baker special, and he got it tattooed on his arm. And now he's got to show the world, and he's tweeting it out, and it's all over Instagram and social media.
Oh, you know there's going to be an idiot next year. Super Bowl champs, Cleveland Browns.
100%.
100%.
Yeah. Because they love Baker, which I get, and the Browns, they can't possibly go in a worse direction. They were 0-16 a year ago.
But everything's gravy for them.
Imagine one win, one half, and you get a tattoo with the guy with his name on your arm.
Because of a great play.
It was a pretty cool play.
It was.
I'll give him that. See your boy Tiger's on fire at the Tour Championships. He's currently, I believe he's 6-under, tied for the lead with Justin Rose.
He might be 8 now, Brian.
Is he? I think he's on 18, so maybe he went off on 18. But I feel like every time he plays, he puts himself in contention on at least one of the days. You know, he did it yesterday, and he held on today, didn't blow up.
And most guys on tour, if they have a great round, 65, their bad round is 69, 68. His bad rounds are even par, which he's got to figure out.
Are you buying it, though, going into the weekend?
Right. He's 6-under. He's only 1-under today. He was 8. He made a couple bogeys.
Are you going to be couching it this weekend, watching Tiger? I mean, the Tour Championship's a very unique tournament. There's only 30 players in the field.
I got my kids this weekend. There's going to be some couching. Friday, Saturday night, two Leaf games, golf, Tiger in the hunt.
Couch.
Yeah.
Packers. Well, you're not a Packers fan.
Well, the way I describe it to them is like we do something in the morning. We wander around, go to Wonderland, wherever. And then I just said, for you guys to be nice and sane, during the afternoon, you need some quiet time.
The quiet time's a tough one, isn't it?
No, they love it.
Oh, they do?
Oh, yeah.
See, my kid isn't old enough to understand the importance of quiet time.
See, my nine-year-old's getting lazy now, like a teenager a little bit, where she's like, I don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay.
You're fine
with that.
I can
play that game.
Yeah. You want lazy?
I'll show you lazy.
We will have a lazy off. Do you know what I was doing with my morning? I was in the pool, our first swim lesson.
Tarp off?
I did go shirt off. I was wondering that. Like, do I go out? Is this going to be awkward? Because I didn't know what kind of pool we were going to be in. Like, I didn't know if it was just a little tiny pool up to your shin, and I'm like, what do I need to be in a bathing suit? But we got, like, into the pool.
Were you forced to go to it, or did you want to go?
I wanted to go. I didn't necessarily think when we signed up I would be the guy in the pool. Like, I thought my wife would go in there with her, but she wanted me to go in the pool. I'm cool with doing that. I got mornings off. I can go. And I wasn't the only dad. Shout out to the dads in the pool. Multiple, and you make eye contact. You're like, yes, there's one. There's at least one other dad. Because it's, generally speaking, I mean, it's stereotyping and times have changed, but generally speaking, it's a mom thing. But yeah, I was in there, man.
Thing. I did a lot of dad things that were mom things in my early childhood for my kids.
Because
I was retired.
Right?
I was just doing nothing.
Right.
I was in swimming pools, like camps and jungle gyms and all over the place, which I didn't have a problem
That's
with.
That's a good thing, man.
Yeah, you're wandering around. You're like, where's the other dads? What, you can't come here, dads?
Right.
Just me?
Yeah, what's your problem? Does make It's kind of a gratifying moment. Like, I'm in the pool. Like, I'm not looking for awards or, you know, adulation from people or anything like that, but I got in the pool. Shout out to all the dads learning how to swim.
What'd that cost you? What does a camp cost you?
It's not really a camp. Like, it's through the city, and I don't know.
You got to do it, though, man.
It's like $75.
You got to do it, because now my kids, you just go swim.
You have to. You have to. Like, Noodles doesn't know how to swim. And we're not talking behind his back, because he's not here. He has said this many times on the air. He doesn't know. He's never learned how to swim. He's got two brothers. I assume that they don't know how to swim either. Wouldn't you think?
How are you 45 years old and not know how to swim? Like,
he's got a pool. Noodles has a pool and doesn't
know how to
swim. But how
do you not know how to swim? You just move your arms and legs.
Well, dude, you got to have more respect for the water than that. It's not that easy. You have to know the technique.
Dude, treading water? You go like this, back and forth.
It's natural for us because you're an arrogant swimmer.
I'm swim guy.
You're an arrogant swimmer. You got to have respect for the pool.
I just don't get it when you, like, I don't know, you just move your arms and you can float.
Well, it's not that easy.
So you think if we threw Noodles in at a party in the deep end, he would drown?
That's exactly what would happen. I'm not even goofing around. Like, he is terrified of the water. He doesn't know how to swim.
I gotta ask him.
You know, I bet you'd be surprised at the percentage of people in the world that don't know how to swim. I bet you it's close to 50%.
No way.
More than 50%.
No way. More than 50% don't know how to swim?
I would say so.
No way. I would say 20%.
Let's look that up, Al.
Jerry's percentage.
I'm at 50%.
I'm at 20%.
And we're talking about adults, you know.
25 to 30, maybe.
Look at you starting to creep up. Second thoughts. All right, back into the NFL. The legacy of Baker Mayfield. How lucky is Hugh Jackson that he still has a job in Cleveland to even coach a guy like Baker Mayfield? Will Blackman will join us, longtime NFLer, analyst with the NFL Network. Back into the Leafs Sabres tonight. You can hear that game right here on TSN 1050.